Our next speaker tonight, let's move right along, is Belina Fruitman. Her bio can be read right here on the inside of the program. By now, I'm sure the first third of your notes are full, so just like make a little bit more room to take notes while Belina's speaking. Actually, I have a handout for when Belina speaks. Thank you, Belina. What me addicted? Okay. Okay, great. I'll pass.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming tonight. And I want to thank S.D. Schwab for thinking of me and inviting me. That was very kind of you. And I remember a few years ago, S.D. was so interested in addictions. Remember when we first met, I could see she was very interested because she had a lot of questions. And we talked about how I could talk to our people about it, because you don't really hear about this so much in the Jewish community. You really don't. How many people in the room know somebody who's dealing with an addiction? So about, I'd say a third, maybe about a third of you. That's pretty significant. So we're going to talk more about addiction. And I have two different handouts for you, so you don't really have to take notes, unless you want to. So essentially, an addiction is occurring when someone's life functioning is problematic. So for instance, signs would be they are having marital problems. They can't maintain a career. They're having trouble parenting. Maybe there's abuse or neglect going on at home. They're having trouble with day-to-day follow-through and responsibilities. And then, of course, there's the medical piece. Sometimes there's medical implications depending on what you're doing to self-medicate, because addictions really are just a symptom of something larger. So when someone tells you or they admit that they have a problem with an addiction, you have to always ask, well, what's the root issue? Because it's never the substance. And maybe in our case, it's not substances. Sometimes it's hoarding. Sometimes it's food. Besides drugs and alcohol and prescription medications, there's social networking, right? The average person checks their phone 150 times a day. You've all heard of FOMO, right? Has everybody heard of FOMO? Right? Fear of missing out. That's a real phenomenon now, especially with our teenagers. So other examples include addictions to shopping. So the list can go on and on. I mean, people can abuse whatever their drug of choice is, but oftentimes they're self-medicating anxiety. That's very typical. Depression. It could be something like loneliness or loss or grief. But it's important that people get to the root issue before you can make any progress. And that's where I come in. So I have two practices, a woman's way to recovery. I've been specializing in women and mental health and addictions since 1995. And I also do interventions for people who are not motivated yet. So they're not recognizing that there's an issue at hand and there's an addiction. So people who love them have taken notice and therefore hire someone to help move that person into another stage so they can focus on recovery and let go of being resistant. So from here, now that you have a clearer idea of what is addiction and what that looks like, there's a model called the stages of change. And it's been around for a while. The two people who came up with the idea and the research behind it are called Prochaska and DiClemente. Has anyone heard of them? The LCSWs have, right? Yeah. So essentially, it's important to know where people are in the stage model, because once you can figure that out, you can help guide them through the process so they can get to a point of recovery and abstinence. That would be the usual typical goal for someone who has maladaptive behaviors going on. So the first stage is pre-contemplation. That means that the person is in complete denial. They don't think there's any issue, any problem. There is no addiction. They don't know what you're talking about. So the people who raised their hands, who said they know someone who has an addiction, how many of them are in this stage, pre-contemplation? One, two, three. Okay, so that's fairly good news. Right? Okay. Not for them, but for considering that a third of the people raised their hands, that means maybe they're forward, moving forward in this process. So they're completely blind to the consequences that other people are seeing, which is, of course, concerning. The second stage is contemplation. This is where the person at hand is starting to realize that perhaps they do need to consider that there's a problem and that something might need to change, but they're really not invested yet. They're still resistant, but they're somewhat open to discovery and learning about what is an addiction, whether it's substance abuse or substance dependence or something else that they're abusing. So they're contemplating, they're willing to talk about it with someone, whether it's a loved one or a professional, they're opening up to the idea of discussion. Okay? The third step is preparation. This is when the person is really ready to figure out, okay, now what? I'm open, I'm honest, I'm genuine, I realize that I have to change. So I'm going to start to prepare. So this is where they're doing a lot of research, and I'll get to that later. They're starting to consider, well, what are strategies? What do I really need in order to reach fundamental change and health in my life? So they're looking at a lot of options and how to prepare for change and how to take steps. Like, for instance, they're looking towards their synagogue. They're looking towards clergy for guidance or a therapist or people who have been in recovery who have moved away from that drug of choice, whatever that was. Food, hoarding, social networking, drugs, alcohol. Any other, what am I leaving out? Shopping. What was that? Cleaning, like OCD behavior, obsessive compulsive behavior. That's, yes. So that's an example of self-medicating because you're probably, it's an anxiety disorder. So you're trying to cope with your anxiety by maybe over-cleaning. That's what you're thinking about? Definitely. Definitely. So in preparing, you're looking at other support groups possibly, like a 12-step model or a Women for Sobriety kind of model, or online programming, or inpatient, or outpatient, or intensive outpatient. There's so many options. This is the time when people are looking at what are the options? What resources are in my community? And trying to figure out how to tap into those resources so that they can begin to really embrace the work, because it takes work, and they have to be ready and prepared to do the work. Because even if they do reach out and they start to prepare, they have to be committed to doing the work, because it's not easy. You're looking at really significant lifestyle changes for most people. Changing old habits, for instance, is not a simple task. So then, from there, once somebody's ready to embrace doing the work, there's the action step. This is where they're actually living it. So they figured out what needs to happen in theory, and they are committing to that. But now they have to really stay actively involved, whatever that is, meeting with a sponsor regularly, going to meetings, going to therapy, a meeting with clergy or their Rebbetzin, whoever is loving and supportive and patient and consistent. So they're actively involved and they really embrace the truth and they're doing everything possible to try to stay sober. So at this point, we move into maintenance. This is where somebody has some long-term sobriety, for instance, 6 months or more, and they have not relapsed. They are engaged. They have not gone back to the old maladaptive behaviors, and they've maintained it. And now they're paying it forward. They are meeting with other people who have dealt with the same addiction. Maybe they're a sponsor, maybe they're mentoring others, and they're supportive to people in their community, and they're sharing what they've learned. So that's called maintenance. There is a stage of relapse that does happen. That's just part of the process sometimes. But it doesn't mean that they go right back to pre-contemplation and denial. It doesn't, because they have all this education now and they have a strong knowledge base at that point. So therefore, they can get right back to maintenance as long as they use the tools that they've learned and they are eager to get back on track. But it does happen. It doesn't mean that they're a failure. It doesn't mean that any of us should judge them. It just means that they need to figure out what the trigger was, because that's a big part of addictions, is learning to recognize what triggered you to go back to your old habits or your old addiction. Once somebody's really cognizant of those triggers, they're able to either avoid them, certain ones you can't avoid, like unhealthy people in your life, people who only spend their time in bars, for instance, or doing things that are unhealthy. Other triggers that you can't avoid, like maybe people who you have conflict with, those people you learn to deal with in a healthy way by changing your own thinking and being mindful about how you play a role in every relationship in your life. So recognizing triggers can be a way to avoid relapse. The other aspect of addiction and recovery is strategies. So that's another handout that you have, and I listed 10. These are proven strategies taken from literature that have shown that this is what most people need in order to be successful. And this really, part of this fits with the planning stage as well as action. Learning facts. So for instance, whatever you're abusing, learning more about that. Learning more about what's causing that and what that looks like for other people who are dealing with the same addiction. Reading books, articles, blogs, literature, getting as much information as you can about the issue that you're struggling with. The second one is exploring your feelings around possible change, which fits more with contemplation, right? Right. So if you're not in touch with your feelings, you're not going to invest in doing the work to change. So exploring your feelings around change. Increase your awareness and depth around how you really feel about this. Feelings are a clue into your life, so learning how to get in touch with your feelings is critical. And facing fear, because chances are there's fear around change. So being really cognizant of what you're fearful of and learning the importance of confronting fear, because really it's the only way to overcome, whether it's OCD or any other fear-based disorder. Really walking into it and facing it is the only way to make progress in fighting it. Three is consider the effect on others. So asking yourself, how does changing a certain negative behavior affect others in your life, whether it's your spouse or your children? But sometimes there's an enabler in your family or in your life. And when you do want to change, they might not be supportive because maybe it's playing a role in your family dynamic. So being aware of all of these different issues is really paramount. Four, look within. Examine how your life will be better without your problem behavior. So one thing that I do with every single client is go over what are the pros and cons of the addiction. Because there's always pros and cons, right? I mean, most of you might think, oh no, there's only consequences, there's only negative, but no, not necessarily. Usually the pro is that they're numbing. So it's an escape. It's a convenient, easy escape from whatever is haunting them. We were talking about trauma earlier. That's very typical as well, especially with women. Women who have experienced serious trauma like sexual abuse, rape, God forbid, they tend to want to self-medicate to escape and numb from memories or feelings. So one typical pro is, oh, I don't have to feel anything. I don't have to think about this. I can escape. But, of course, you focus on the consequence, which is the implications to that, because there are endless implications. So five is getting involved, which I mentioned. That's a strategy. Joining a support group, for instance. Finding a Torah partner would be an example, or a study group, a Torah study group, joining groups, healthy groups, like certain meetup organizations, or 12-step groups, book clubs. I'm often referring people to meetup. Has anyone gone to a meetup? One, two, three? Okay. I'm often referring people there who are learning new coping skills and don't have a lot of healthy friends. And they need to try new activities because they're spending too much time shopping or drinking or having happy hours, for instance. So they need to figure out, how do I have fun in a sober way with other people? So I find that to be a good organization, and it's often free. Thank you. Oh, great.
And I also want to share that I think it's important to know for women, as you have said, you put it on more of the labels of abuse and drinking and some of the addictions we know of. But I have also learned through life changes and experiences, it's important to know whether it's a good change in your life or something difficult. It's always good to stay aware of yourself because you don't want an overwhelming experience, whether it's a symptom or not a symptom, to be something.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. That was really valuable.
Could you repeat that, please? We didn't hear all
of it. Which part?
Whatever she did. Basically, I was just sharing that I work along the same line, not in the same way Bolina does, but I could appreciate what she was saying because we provide classes where I work, and having experienced some of this myself, personally, there was more than one. My personal story, but I believe it's better than others to get help when necessary and get the right help. That what she's saying is very valuable. She's talking about addictions tonight, which we all know can happen, but we also talk about general life, whether you have a barbecue side, a wedding, and a new baby all in 1 year, or you have a death in the family and other things that are going on. So a woman has to be in tune with that. Body changes and mind changes. Is it a good thing or a hard thing? A lot of things can be overwhelming in ways you don't recognize, and a bad one day can turn to a bad year unless you take some hold.
Yes.
So just explaining how I got on this, and I'm happy you're doing what you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, so part six, number six for strategies, is making a commitment. So studies have proven and shown that if you have a goal, like New Year's resolutions, for instance, if you share it with someone else, you're more likely to be successful. So my clients who have a lot of secrecy and shame around the addiction, I'm sad to say, but they're less likely to be successful. Because once you begin to share your story and be open about it, it's cathartic. And then you attract people who want to support you. So getting support is really important. So thank you for that part. Thank you for that reminder. Six. Well, seven, actually. Ask for help. This fits with sharing your story. Brené Brown often talks about this. Are you all familiar with her? Speaking of TED Talks, she has excellent TED Talks. She talks about getting vulnerable. And that is part of the process in recovery, is being vulnerable and showing weakness. So it's okay to ask for help. We all need help sometimes. It's part of our human experience. So if you are struggling, please share that with someone, because that someone might surprise you and you might have an aha moment where that person's able to identify with you and give you resources that could help. Eight is avoid slippery places. This goes back to triggers. This means relapse. So being aware of your triggers and what are slippery places. Where can you not go? It might be the mall, right? It might be Costco. Nine is replace negatives with positives. Try to change the negative thinking. Negative thinking feeds on addiction. So that's why cognitive behavioral therapy is really the treatment of choice. Because you learn to challenge negative thoughts and that inner chatter that most of us have. And you learn how to redirect your thoughts to the positive. And 10 is reward, because as I said, this is a big endeavor, and this is can be the biggest challenge for many people who are faced with addictions. So figure out what you're going to do to reward yourself so that it all feels worth it. Everybody's rewarded in a different way, so know what your carrot is. That's your incentive to keep you motivated and keep you going. Does anyone have any questions? Oh, sorry. Yes, please.
On the reward aspect, what happens when a person finds a reward and uses that reward to compensate for the last addiction?
Is it a healthy reward or unhealthy reward?
Not necessarily. All rewards can become unhealthy if they're overused.
Well, through the therapeutic process, hopefully they've learned what addiction looks like so they can be aware of whether or not they're switching addictions, because you don't want that, of course.
For example.
Mm-hmm. Hope.